They wanted to prevent the procreation of the feeble-minded, the insane, the criminalistic, the epileptic, the inebriated, the drug-addicted, the diseased, the blind, the deaf, deformed, orphans, ne'er-do-wells, tramps, the homeless, and paupers.
Democrat Mitch Van Yeres represents the Charlottesville area in the Virginia House of Delegates. He introduced a bill last year to express the state's profound regret over the eugenics law that was passed in 1924 to authorize forced sterilizations.
You can see where the state had made a major step in the wrong direction.
The law required that each patient receive a hearing to determine whether or not they should be sterilized. Paul Lombardo, a professor of law and ethics at the University of Virginia, says the hearings rarely occurred in a meaningful way.
The guardian who was supposed to look out for the rights of those patients was paid $5 per person, and oftentimes sterilization hearings took place for 10 or 15 or 20 people at the same time.
Phil Thyssen, an activist who works on mental health issues, believes many Virginians think those who were sterilized were profoundly mentally retarded, but that isn't the case.
Many of these people that were put in state facilities were strictly poor, uneducated, and the state didn't have many of the facilities that it does today and programs in place, like juvenile homes.
When I went to Junior Sick, 1940, sterilized October the 31st, 1940.
Jesse Meadows was only 17 when his father sent him away to the Virginia colony for the epileptic and the feeble-minded in Lynchburg. In 1940, it was standard procedure for the state to take away his ability to procreate.
Someone said it would help me. I wouldn't have no feeble-minded children.
He hadn't committed a crime, and he didn't see himself as a burden to society.
Why did you go to the colony in the first place?
Didn't have no home, and my mother died when I was real young. And my daddy, my stepmother said if my daddy didn't get rid of my mother's children, that she wasn't going to leave him. And he started having put one place in another, and he found a way to get rid of me.
He wound up in the colony because he had been framed for arson. So he was sent from his Madison County home to the colony at Lynchburg. He would spend most of the next 12 years there.
My mother, before she died, she called all of her children to the bedside and told him to be good, meet her in heaven, and called my daddy to the bedside and told him to take care of her children, see if they brought up right, and she wasn't dead 6 months before he was married again. My daddy would sometimes he'd call the trolley, won't be out long enough to come home to clean up some land.
He was paroled from the colony in 1942 and went to work for the Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland. When the Army found out that he had been institutionalized, he was fired. With no other place to go, he voluntarily signed up for another stay at the colony. He thought he could come and go as he pleased, but he was essentially jailed for another 10 years. But it was the cheap labor he provided that made him such an attractive person to keep at the colony.
I didn't want to go home and tell me I couldn't go because they needed me there to paint. I painted some of the buildings by myself. I'd go to work for people. I'd be paroled out to the supervisor's sister and her husband. I'd paroled out to the woman's supervisor. For 2 or 3 weeks, painted her house inside and out. And I'd painted the trolley all day sometime for 25 cents a week. And some at night, some of the employees would want me to go to their house and paint some for them.
When he was finally released from the colony in 1952, he had a hard time getting employers to pay his Social Security. Others tried to use the fact that he was a former patient to intimidate him.
People look down on you like you're an animal when you've been to a place like that. Sometimes you'd walk up and down the street and people would see you and say, yeah, the way you old trolley patient. One time I was sitting in a resting, me and another, my wife, we were sitting in a resting and drinking beer. Some old man coming out working the trolley said, I'm going to turn y'all in for being here drinking beer. He crawled back over there and they told him, said, he's discharged. You can't bother him now.
When he was let go from the colony in 1952, the superintendent at the time told Meadows he should never have been a patient.
And Dr. Hurl said he checked up on my people and said he found out my daddy ought to have been over there instead of me. Said I got us the wrong start in life.
Meadows got married in 1960 and his wife died in 1989. They were never able to have children.
She blamed my daddy. He signed the papers, too, said he'd do anything to get rid of me.
Do you still keep in touch with people who you were with at the colony?
One woman lived down the street, Sarah Jane Wally.
They didn't even let us know nothing about this until after I was 22 years old.
Sarah Jane Wily was taken to the colony when she was 12, along with her younger brother and sister. She had grown up in southwestern Virginia. Today she is a 65-year-old woman who recalls what it was like when she was sterilized in 1958.
The guy from Richmond took us into a meeting, a big bunch of us, Lois Cern, my brother, Eddie Marsh, Carla Moss, Anne Moss, Gurney Gertrude, all of us, who went into a meeting.
It appears that lying to the patients in order to get their cooperation with the sterilization procedure was quite common.
When a girl named Shirley Breeden, she had the same thing done, and a attendant named Miss Woods was working with us, and the only way she got Shirley to go to the hospital was to tell her she was going to have a appendix out. We thought, sure, it was our appendix, but it wasn't. We was operating on to keep us from having children. Had her tubes. A little girl named Donna Suana, she ran away. Got killed by a train. That's the reason she ran away. She didn't want to be operated on.
Wiley worked as a nursing aide before she graduated from the colony, which became known as the Central Virginia Training Center in the 1970s. She had been institutionalized for most of her life. She not only had to get used to living in the world, she also found out that she couldn't have children.
Didn't apologize to us, no.
Do you yourself regret not being able to have children?
Yes, because I love them. There's a little girl next door. Every time I get any money, I give her stuff. Yeah, I love kids.
Wiley would like to be paid damages for her experiences, but she doesn't expect that to happen anytime soon. Currently, she struggles month to month to make ends meet. After her husband died, she wasn't eligible to keep receiving his disability check. The General Assembly's expression of profound regret seems to be enough for Wiley, though, but Jesse Meadows isn't satisfied.
I think I ought to apologize to the regret. I'm a bit late for that now. I think I ought to pay people for the way they've done them. I know that'll never happen.
Mary Bishop, a reporter for the Roanoke Times, has spent much of the past 10 years researching the life stories of the victims of eugenical laws.
This is what happens when certain people are devalued, systematically devalued. This is what can happen very quietly, behind the scenes, and no one's aware of it. The general public wasn't paying attention and didn't realize that their government was rounding up people, putting them into institutions, declaring them inferior, and sterilizing them against their wills.
Sean Tubbs, WVTF News.